We have you have to put this on. We have too late. We have three sheets over here. This week, basically, we're going to do JH2, which is the second sheet. But you still have the timeline sheets, which is the first sheet. And a little bit from last week, we did not quite finish it. So that is the first sheet, which is the number one. We're going to finish with that. Keep the timeline sheet. I guess you know what time period we're talking about. So basically, last week we discussed, we want to discuss the Second Temple period, which is Bayis Sheni. And of course, we have to start off with Bavel. In order to understand the exile, the Gullus Bavel, we have to understand what led to the Gullus, what led to the exile. And therefore, we started from Yeshiyahu HaMelech. We showed last week how Yeshiyahu HaMelech was killed in the battle against Paro in Nechoi, and that was in the year 3316, which is about 22 years before the Churban. Since he was such a tzaddik, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, after he was killed when he battled Paro in Nechoi, he composed Megillas Eicha, a special chapter by Yikainin Yirmiyahu Yeshiyahu, 22 psukim, and because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu staved off the Churban for 22 years, and therefore in the year 3316, which is 22 years before the Churban, that's when he was killed. We showed that the next king of Yehuda was Yehoyachaz, who was his son. By the way, some say his name was really Yochanan, and he changed his name to Yehoyachaz. He was his son, but then when Paroi came back from his battle, so he said, this king over here, Yehoyachaz, he's not one of my people. And after all, I'm the victor, I beat Ashur, I beat Assyria, and therefore he deposed Yehoyachaz, he had him killed in Mitzrayim, and he put up his puppet, Yehoyakim, which was really his name was Eliakim, and he changed his name to Yehoyakim, and he said, you're my vassal, and you'll be, from me, you'll be in Eretz Yehuda, you'll be the king of Yehuda. We said that was already the beginning of the problem. Why was that the beginning of the problem? Because once Israel, Judea, lost its independence somewhat, and it was really, he was a vassal from Paroi, there was a power struggle in that time in the world. Yes, you had Paro, which was like the old guard. Ashur already was out. Paro was the old guard. The emerging power was really Babylonia. It was Babel. And Babel was the emerging power, and there was going to be a big battle 4 years later, in the fourth year of Yehoyakim, which is in the year 3319, there was a big battle between Nebuchadnezzar was the Melech Babel, the king of Babel, and Egypt, and Paro and Nechoi, which took place in Karchemish. And that big battle took place in the year 3319, whereby in that battle, Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babel, literally obliterated, completely wiped out the entire Egyptian army. The scholars go so far to say that Nebuchadnezzar literally ran unimposed the entire Syria area, the entire Turkey, Syria, northeastern part of Eretz Yisrael. He ran unopposed for an entire 6 months, basically claiming the entire land, the entire Assyrian land, for himself. So you can see the extent of his victory. He was the new player in the field, in the world arena, Nebuchadnezzar. He started controlling that entire area of the Middle East. The problem with that was, of course, is that since Eliakim or Yehoyakim was a vassal from Egypt, he was on the losing end. He was put up there by Paroi, by Egypt, and the new power in the area was Nebuchadnezzar, was Babel, and therefore, you can imagine this was already problematic for Judea, for Eretz Yehuda. Now, before we go further and we say how he set his sights on Eretz Yisrael, on Eretz Yehuda, and he came down to conquer Yehuda, who was Nebuchadnezzar, first of all? So there's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara in number 5 on the old sheet, on the first sheet, the Gemara says that who was Nebuchadnezzar? The Gemara says an interesting story. The Gemara says like this, number 5. Uma vischar abba psioi sheshalamti lo yisarosho sherotz achei kvoidi ato tmiyo. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, and the Medrash says, that as reward for the 4 steps that I repaid to that wicked person, he ran after my covet, and you're wondering, why did I repay this Russia who made an extra 4 steps for my covet? כשאני משען שכן לאברון מיצר ויעקב שרוצה לפני כסוסים הלך סכם וכמה, כשב הוא says that for sure I will repay anybody that does for my covet, I will for sure repay him, אברון מיצר ויעקב. So the Gemara asks the question, Hani Arab Siyas Maihi, what are these four steps that we're talking about? So the Gemara says, דכסיב, בו איסה היא שולח מרדוך בלדון בן בלדון מלך בובל ספרים. A while back, in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, so the king of Bavel, or the prince, or the leader of Bavel, at that time, of course, Bavel was part of Ashur, was part of Assyria. But the king of Bavel, his name was Meradoch Baladon. His father's name was Baladon as well. So he sent letters, Sfarim, he sent letters to Yehuda, to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So the Gemara asked the question, Mishum Kicholach Chizkiyahu Vayechazak, why did he send him letters? Why did he send him gifts? What happened? Just because he got sick, we know Chizkiyahu Melech was dying and then miraculously recovered. Because of that, he sent him letters. Zimar says, yes. In Lidrash HaSamoifis Hashem Ba'aretz, there was a miracle took place at that time. What was the miracle? Dom Rav Yochanan, Oysayim Shemes Ba'achos, Shtei Shois Faya. B'chicholach Chizkiyahu V'itpach, Adrinu Kutshubrichu Lahanach Eser Shoi Na'alei. That when Achaz, who was the father of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, when he died, so the way Akash Bochu shortened the day by 10 degrees or 10 hours, 10 degrees on a sundial. In those times, they used to have a sundial. So they didn't have clocks. So you can see, as the sun goes further down, it's another ma'ala, it's another degree on the sundial. If you want to see where you have a sundial, if you ever go to Eretz Yisrael, you go to the Shari Chesed neighborhood, and right outside the Beis Knesset Kahal Hasidim, which is across the street from the Beis Knesset Hagra in Shari Chesed, there's an old sundial on the wall. You can actually see, based on the shadow of the sun, that's how it goes down every time another degree. So the Gemara says that when Achaz died, so Kadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle and made the day much shorter. He shortened the day so that there shouldn't be too many eulogies on Achaz. Achaz was a wicked king, so Kadosh Baruch Hu shortened the day. Now when Chizkiyahu HaMelech got better after he was miraculously cured, when he was on his deathbed, and miraculously he got cured, so Kadosh Baruch Hu gave back those extra 10 hours or those extra 10 degrees on the sundial in order to extend the day. So this king of Bavel, Meradoch Baladon, heard about this miraculous occurrence, what took place in Israel, because after all he saw that the day was extended. See, he said, Omaluhu, look at the third paragraph of number 5. Omaluhu, he turned to his servants. My high, what's going on? Omulese, they told him, Chizkiyo cholash v'itpach. Chizkiyo HaMelech got sick, and he got cured, and that's why the day was extended. Omar, he said, Iko gavro ki hai, v'loi bi'ina v'shdure le'shlomo. Such a great person exists in this world that the day extends in his honor, and I'm not going to send him a letter. So because of that, Kosvalei, he sent him a special letter. This is the king of Bavel. This is some years earlier, in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He sent him Shlomo Lemalka Chizkiyahu. He wrote a letter and he said, greetings to King Chizkiyahu. Shalom Lekalto di Yerushalayim. Greetings to the city of Yerushalayim. Shalom Le'elokor Abba. And greetings to the great God who's watching over the city. Look what the Gemara says, the fourth paragraph in number 5. Nebuchadnezzar at that time was Safre de Baladon Hava. He was a scribe. He was a servant. He was one of the scribes. He was the recording secretary of this king. So he shaita lo hava hosim. He wasn't there. Ki also, and when he came back, you know, he was out probably at a meeting. Amalu, he said, Heichu kasrisu, how did you people write? So Amulei, they said, Hachi kasrinu, did it the way we wrote. We wrote, greetings to you, Chizkiyahu HaMelech, greetings to the city of Yerushalayim, and greetings to the great God. Amalus, he said, Kritu le'e l'kor rabo, v'kisvisu le'e b'saif. You call him, you give greetings to the great God, and you put it all the way at the end of the three greetings. First you give Chizkiyahu greetings, then to the city, and then to their God. That doesn't, you can't do that. Amar, he said, Elohachik sov, this is what you have to write. Shalom le'elokor abba, shalom le'elokor Yerushalayim, shalom le'malka Chizkiyahu. He said, you got to put Hashem, or you got to put the great God as a greeting first. Before you write, start off the letter, you have to first give greetings to this great God. So Amar Leiter, I told him, keine digese, iu lave parvanke. I'm sorry, the letter is out already. There's nothing we can do about it. We sent the letter out. So Rohat Basrei, so the Gemara says that Nebuchadnezzar ran after the messenger. He was stopped by a malach, he was stopped in his tracks, he couldn't reach him at the end. So the Gemara says, that if he wouldn't have stopped him, he would have run even more to try and change this message, then he would have wiped out the entire Klal Yisrael. In other words, the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewarded him with such a reward that he became the great Nebuchadnezzar and he was able to destroy the entire Beis HaMikdash and exile Klal Yisrael, the first exile they ever had thrown out of their land, was because HaKadosh Baruch Hu never returns. Anything that any person does never goes unnoticed. And even a Rasha like Nebuchadnezzar, but because the Gemara says, because he took those extra four steps for the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'm rewarding you. So the Gemara says, from here we see that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards even a Rasha in such a way, even more so, we have to learn. And we learn a concept from over here, and nothing in life goes unnoticed. We might think that sometimes we do things, it's not a big deal. Everything, al kol davar yovei b'cheshvon, everything that a person does, for good or for bad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps a reckoning, keeps a cheshvon. We see even the Nebuchadnezzar, for the extra four steps that he took, the Gemara said, look at that. Because of that, he was merited, at least, that he should be the great conqueror and the great all-powerful ruler. Okay, so this was the beginning, at least, of Nebuchadnezzar. Now we're talking, of course, years later, and now he's the king of Babel, and he comes and he goes and he fights against Paro. He starts taking control of the entire northeastern part of Eretz Yisrael. Now, after he defeats Paro, he sets his sights on the rest of that land. You have to understand, that time you had the Ashur, which was the northeastern part, which was Syria, which was Turkey. Of course, he came from Babel, which was Iraq. So that whole area was already under his control. Egypt, which was below Eretz Yisrael, which was below Judea, was the other major power at that time. And there was a land in between. The land in between was not Yehuda, was not Eretz Yehuda, because Eretz Yehuda was a small player. The land in between was a very strategic area, which was the coastal plain, which is really Eretz Plishtim, Palestine. The real Palestine is the coastal land in between, with cities ranging from Gaza, Gaza in the south, going up to Ashkelon, going all the way up to Tzur, to Lebanon. That whole area was called Eretz Plishtim. So Nebuchadnezzar, he realized in order to have a strategic base, the entire Mediterranean, in order to be able to conquer the entire Egypt, he set his sights on that entire coastal area, Eretz Plishtim. So he starts going, making, after 6 months, or after a while, I think Gemara the Medrash says it was the next year. But within that year, he started going down, traveling down, trying to capture these coastal cities, Eretz Plishtim. We understand that from the Babylonian Chronicles, which was all types of things which were written in that time period, we see one of the things which was written is that the Ashkelon, which was the city on the coast, it was a Palestinian king, and they were, of course, very, very close bond with Egypt. Mitzrayim was right below that, and therefore they were not vassals, but they were bond, they were partners with the Egyptians. And he's fearing this great mighty army of Nebuchadnezzar. He sends a letter down to Paroi, come and help me, after all, I'm your partner, come and help me, Nebuchadnezzar is coming to do battle against me. Paroi never showed up, Nebuchadnezzar came and literally wiped out the entire city of Ashkelon. As you can imagine, Judea, Yehuda, with Eliakim, Yehoiakim in Yehuda, they start getting very nervous, because if Nebuchadnezzar is coming down, you're right, Yehuda had no real axe to grind with Babel. Babel, after all, was going to take control of the entire area. But Eliakim or Yehoiakim was nevertheless a vassal of Egypt, and he knew that Babylonia was fighting against Egypt, and therefore Yehoiakim started getting very nervous. He sees Nebuchadnezzar coming down the entire area, coming down the coast. He knows he is next. What does he do? He calls out Yehoiakim, Melech Yehuda, calls out a tzoim, calls out a fast, a public fast. Everybody should come and do tshuva. Now, don't get me wrong. Yehoiakim, we're going to soon see, was no great tzaddik. He was a terrible Rosh, the type of things that he used to do. We're going to soon see in the Medrash is mind-boggling. He got punished because of the Averis that he did. Terrible, terrible things. But they knew, you know, there was this outward thing. They knew when there's a difficult time, you call a tzayin, you call a tainus together, you call everybody together for tainus. So he calls everybody together for tainus. If you look in the in the Pasuk, which is number 6 on the old sheet, Asher Hoye Dvar Hashem Elimyo Hanovi, number 7 on the sheet, sorry. Vahi Bishon HaChamishis Lohaya Yochim Ben Yosho Melech Yudah, which is ready the year 3320, which is a year later, Bachidish Hachi, in the 9th month, Kogut Saim Lifnei Hashem, Kolom Yerushalayim, V'chol Ha'om Aboim Or Yidu Yerushalayim. They called a public fast day in the 9th month. Everybody should come from the entire area to Yerushalayim to call, to come and pray to their God. Now, interesting that when Nebuchadnezzar wiped out that city of Ashkelon, was also exactly the 5th year of Yoyakim, also the 9th month. So that we know. We know that from the Babylonian Chronicles. So they seem to match. Presumably, after he came and he wiped out the city of Ashkelon, Yoyakim realized, I am next. I better call a tzoim, I better call a fast day, because I'm getting nervous, he's coming to attack me. Now, at that time, you have to understand, Yoyakim was still a vassal of Egypt. Yirmiyahu HaNavi was at that time the Navi, and he was going around preaching that mitzafon tiposach harah, that everything is going to start from Nebuchadnezzar, from the north, and he's going to overtake us, and he's going to destroy us. It's going to come, Nebuchadnezzar is going to be victorious. Imagine if the king's official position, he's a vassal from Egypt, and then you have a Navi coming around saying that, oh, the one who's going to attack us, the one who's going to wipe us out, the one who's going to defeat us, is going to be Nebuchadnezzar. What if you are a king, what do you charge such a person who goes around saying, telling the people, Nebuchadnezzar is going to take over the country? That's high treason. Yoyakim saw Yirmiyahu HaNavi going around saying that, look, Nebuchadnezzar is coming to destroy our country. He arrested Yirmiyahu HaNavi and he put him in jail. When we find in Yirmiyahu that, in Sefer Yirmiyahu, that Yirmiyahu HaNavi was thrown in jail, it was because of that. Because after all, Yoyakim was part of Egypt. He was a vassal of Egypt. And here comes Yirmiyahu and he says, Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and take control of the entire country. That is treason. He takes Yirmiyahu and he puts him in jail. So Yirmiyahu is in the meantime stuck in jail. They call this public fast day for the 9th month. And everybody should come and pray to God, pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to save them from this terrible terror of Nebuchadnezzar. So let's turn to the second sheet and we'll read a few psukim in Yirmiyahu, Sefer Yirmiyahu. We'll understand a little what's going on. It says like this. Vaitzave Yirmiyahu is Baruch Leimor, and Yirmiyahu commands Baruch Ben Neriya, which was his Talmud, Ani Atzur, I am in prison. Lo yuchal lo beis Hashem. Right now I'm in jail over here. I can't get out. After all, I was thrown into jail. I was saying that Nebuchadnezzar is coming and destroying the country. I can't do anything. Uvasa ata v'kuros v'megillah shekosavta mipi, es divra Hashem v'oznei beis Hashem, v'yoyim soim. He says, I know there's a big fast day which is proclaimed by Yehoyakim against Nebuchadnezzar. Now I told you last time to write a Megillah. I was given a prophecy, Megillas Eicha. In other words, the Eicha, Megillas Eicha, which was written, this is a good, 17 years before the Churban, that's when Megillas Eicha was prophesied to Yirmiyahu Navi, and that's when he wrote it. So he says, we prophesied Megillas Eicha, and you wrote it down. I want you to go on this public fast day, when they're all davening to Hashem to save him from Nebuchadnezzar, I want you to get up there, and I want you to go and tell people the Megillas Eicha, that Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and wipe out the entire land of Eretz Yisrael, and everybody's going to get into exile. Why? Ula tipot chinosim v'nei Hashem v'yeshu v'ish midakar roh, that maybe they'll realize, the people will realize that this is serious, it's going to happen. Maybe combined with the fact that there's a fast day and Nebuchadnezzar is on his way, and you'll tell them the prophecy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they will take it seriously, they'll realize it. And then the pasuk says, "V'ibishan achamishu leYochim ben Yisho v'chodesh atchi, on the 9th month." That's when they call the fast day. Va'yikro Baruch b'sefer zivrei Yirmiyahu beis Hashem, and Baruch ben Neriya gets up there, and in the beis hamikdash, in the beis Hashem, in the b'chotzo beis Hashem, in one of the courtyards, he gets up there and he reads sefer Eicha. So look what happens in pasuk Yud Aleph. So the people heard it. The oznei kolam pasuk Yud Aleph. Ve'yishma Michyo ben Gemariyo ben Shofan es kol divrei Hashem me'al sefer. He heard all these words of Megillas Eicha. Vayered beis Hamelech. He goes down to the palace. Alishkas haSefer. Vinei sham kol asorim yeshuim. And all the ministers are sitting in the palace. And he tells them, Vayom ve'elov. And he tells them, look what this person is prophesizing about his impending doom, which is taking place. Vayom ve'elov. And they told him, Shevno, sit down. V'kireno bozneinu. Let us hear what he has to say. Vayikra Baruch Bosneim, and Baruch Ben Neriya came, he read it a second time, in front of all these ministers. And the ministers heard what all these things, you know, it was, on the one hand they see Nebuchadnezzar is coming down, they know he literally wipes out, obliterates everything in his path, they know that they're next, they hear the prophecy of Yirmiyahu Novi at the same time, pachadu ish al reyu, they get scared. Perhaps we should tell the king. Maybe if the king realizes it's serious, he'll change his ways. He'll maybe go out to Nebuchadnezzar. They'll do tshuva. They realize it's serious now. So they started telling the king all this. So the pasuk says, when they read three stanzas, once they read the fourth stanza, Yikra'o, he ripped it, Batar with a knife, Hasefer, the Sefer, Vahashlech Aleish, and he burnt it in the fire. What took place? That's all the Navi says. What took place? So the Pasuk says like this. Look in, the Medrash says in Yalkut Shemani, what took place? Vayikikoy Yehudish, Sholosh Dalsais, Va'abo Yikor Batar, Mai Shlosh Dalsais, Va'abo, it's the third paragraph, the fourth paragraph, what's going on? Omuloy Le'yakim. So they told Yoyakim HaMelech, Yemiyo Kosav Sefer Kinnis. He wrote a prophesized Sefer Kinnis. Echa. Amalei Mike Sivbe. What did it say in it? So they told him, Echa Yashva Badot. The city will be desolate. Amal. So Yoyakim said, Vano Malka. Who cares? I will remain the king. I don't care. The entire city can go up in flames. I don't care. Bochay Sivke Balailo. Everybody will be crying at night. The city will be desolate alone at night. Amal, he said, Vano Malka. I don't care. I am the king. As long as I'm the king, I don't care. Da'ach et Tzion Avelus. The roads of Tzion are full of Avelus. Omar, and he said, Va'ano Malka. Again, I am the king. I don't care. Hayut Tzoreha L'Rosh. Once they got to the fourth Pasuk, and the fourth Pasuk said, Tzoreha, meaning its adversaries, Bavel L'Rosh, they will be the head. They will be the king. They'll take control, and you'll be out. Omar, he said, Mi Amru, who said this? Ki Hashem Hoyga L'Rosh Pesheha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a grieving because of all the sins. Miyat, he heard this, he said, I am out. If that's the case, Koda Kolas Kora Shabo, V'Sofam Veish. He took a knife, he ripped out every time it said Hashem's name in the Echo, he ripped it out with a knife, and he burnt the entire Megillas Echo in a fire. Uksiv le'pachdu v'le'koriz b'gem, v'chlau d'boi m'kori. They were all stunned, they couldn't do anything, they couldn't even tear their garments. There was such a power from the king. What do I take out from this story? I take out from this story that the people probably at that time period, they would be willing, perhaps, to change their ways. They would have been willing to realize that the doom is impending and is going to happen. But it started from the top down. The king, Yoyakim, who was a vassal of Egypt, and maybe his own pride, his own covet, he didn't let them. He said, nothing is happening. I'm in charge over here. It was such a, in other words, maybe different than Bayis Sheni, but Bayis Rishon, it really was from the top down. It wasn't from the people. It was more, of course, the people were wicked and the Rishayim and there was a lot of terrible things going on. But the end, not to do tshuva, not to change the ways, the militant approach started from the king down. It started from the top down. And that's in general, that's an important concept. That many times, you know, it's important who is the head, who is the leader, who is in charge. Whether it comes to different things, institutions or schools perhaps, where we send to, we have to always know, where is it coming from? Who is in charge? Whoever is in charge, it usually trickles down. It sets an agenda to the place that they're in charge of. And it's always important to see who is in charge, who is ahead, who is on top of the situation, because that sets the agenda and that sets the tone. In Bayis Rishon, what set the tone was the kings. The kings at the end of Bayis Rishon, Yoyakim, who refused to change their ways, refused to let the people change their ways, refused to let the people do anything, it was because they had their agenda, and they did not let it happen. I think we see that very clearly from this story, especially what took place at that time. Okay. Okay, the year, by the way, if anybody has any questions this year again, like all my other shurim, questions are welcome. You can discuss it. It can be a discussion. Yes. Nachum. Yes. Yes. I heard about that in Ir David. They found it in Ir David, in the not in outside of the old city, and they think there might have been the palace of the time of Churban Bayis Rishon. I heard about that. They found this seal, absolutely right. And he's not mentioned anywhere else in Tanakh, so he wasn't a common name as well. It was a very rare name, and they found the seal. And I think I even saw it when I was there 3 years ago. That's very correct. Thank you, Menachem. Okay. In the year 33, so then what happens? In the year 33:20, Nebuchadnezzar actually comes down after he goes and he obliterates the coastal cities. He comes down and he comes to Yerushalayim. Now, Yehoyakim might be arrogant, he might have pride, but he's no fool. He realizes that Nebuchadnezzar is the world power now, and very quickly he changes sides. He swears allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar, though, by the way, even though he swears allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar and he says, I'll be yours, I'll be listening to you, it was probably only lip service. It was only misafa velachutz. It wasn't sincere. And the reason, of course, is, you have to understand, Babel, in the mindset of the Jewish kings at that time, the people living in Yehuda at that time, Babel was still this faraway power. Babel was Iraq, it was far away. Egypt was right there. Geographically, it was right there. That's the, always, they had a, if they take any side, they would probably be with Egypt. Even though they see Babel as the emerging power, but Babel, they figured, you know, now he's here. Once he goes back to Babel, he goes back to where he is, we can go back to Egypt. Their natural inclination was to be together with Egypt. Also, because Egypt represented to them the old guard, you know, the status quo. Babel was known as a very barbaric, a new power, very barbaric. They weren't used to that. They'd rather not be joined with Babylonia, with Nebuchadnezzar, and therefore, even though he made a deal or he agreed to have to be under the yoke of Babel, it was only misaf al chutz. It was only in the outwards.
I don't understand it. What strategic importance did Jerusalem have to Babel? Why couldn't just stay neutral? Yeah. After all, he was coming down
the coast. Absolutely.
And Jerusalem is not. They wouldn't go through our Yehuda anyway.
Right.
Why bother?
Right. You're right. And it wasn't. Unlike Bayis Sheni, where Judea was a thorn in the sides of the Romans, right? They would fight and they had all these battles. The only country to have two serious, long, protracted battles with Rome in a span of 60, 70 years was Judea in the Second Temple period. In the First Temple period, they weren't even a player. They weren't anything. But yes, on the other hand, they were still part of the bond. They swore allegiance to Egypt, to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a major power. Presumably, Nebuchadnezzar wants to obliterate Mitzrayim. He wants to take control of the whole region. He can't leave Judea by itself if they are part of Mitzrayim. Also, perhaps at that time, if you understand, they went and they literally obliterate the place. They would go and they would exile the people. They would destroy the place, so they couldn't leave anything behind. Perhaps, you know, they'd clean the entire area. It wasn't, you know, your mind, you're looking with democratic values. What do you want from them? They're not doing anything. Leave them alone. In those times, they looked at it. You're over here. You're in my way, and I'm getting rid of you, and I'm exiling you. That was the concept. More land, more power, and therefore that's why they started up with Judea. But you're right. Judea was not a threat to them. It was nothing to them. They didn't need it. But nevertheless, they went after them. Okay. In the beginning, they did not go after them. He wanted allegiance. He wanted Judea to be part of Babel, and Yehoyakim agreed. Had no problem with that. One thing he did do in the year 33:20 is that he took, he accepted the allegiance of Yehoyakim. He went in and he took some of the prized people of Judea, of Yehuda, and he took them back into Babel. He took some of the special people, the princes, you know, the young princes, young up-and-coming from the good homes from Yehuda, he took them and he exiled them to Babel. If you look in the beginning of Sefer Daniel, which is number 2 on the sheet, it says like this, Bishnas Sholosh L'machos Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda Bo Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel Yerushalayim Yotzer Leo. It's not clear what it means, the third year. It could be the third year of the uprising. It's not the third year of his reign. It's not clear which third year it's talking about, but Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim. The Pasuk says, V'yom HaMelech L'Ashpenaz Rav Sarisov. And the king, Nebuchadnezzar, tells his deputy, "Lahavi b'bnei Yisrael u'mizera hamlucha min apartamim. I want from the zera hamlucha. I want from the ones who are from the royal homes. I want the children. Yeladim, children, asher in behem komum, unblemished, v'tovei mare, they look good, u'maskilim b'chol chochmo, wise, v'yodei das, u'mevinei mado, understand science, v'asher koyach behem lamoy b'heichal ha-melech, u'lelamdom sefer, v'loshan kazdim. I want them to be my personal princes back in Babylonia. And therefore what he doing, in other words, he took children, or he took from the young, from the youth, and he took, which is really the future of Klal Yisrael, he took a whole bunch of these youth and he placed them in Bavel under special protective custody and to grow up in the king's palace. What did he try to gain with that? And look, by the way, who he took. Pasuk Hey, Vayman lehem ha-melech v'ayom v'yoymoy mipas bag ha-melech u'miyayin mishityoy u'legadlom shayim shonim sholosh. In other words, they gave them food, they gave them wine. In other words, they took them to bring them up in the royal court back in Babylonia. Vayi behem ibnei Yehuda, Daniel, Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. These were, at those times, these were like the princes. These were like from the royal court. They were from the Yichus, from the good families in Yerushalayim, and they brought them back to Bavel. What did he try and gain with them? So I think it was twofold. Firstly, he wanted for himself. He wanted maybe to have different cultures, different types of people. Like this, he'd be able to get more knowledgeable in the different areas that's under his control. He wanted them to be his deputies. He was training them to be there in his court. Presumably, another thing he wanted to gain is if you take the best of Yehuda, you take the young, the youth, the one who are upcoming, and you say, listen, okay, you swear allegiance, and I'm taking your best. I'm taking back to Bavel. Then it breaks the will of the people. You can be assured they're not going to revolt so quickly. If you have their almost human ransom, if you have their children and their the choicest of their people, you take them back to Bavel, it was like a guarantee almost that the people are not going to revolt. You break the will of the people, they know that their children are, or their youth, their future, is hostage in Babylonia. So perhaps that was probably also part of the reason why he took these people back. Important to know, because at those times, this is the year 3320, 3321, 18 years before the Churban, the people in those times probably think, what's happening to us? They're taking our best boys away, our youth, our future. They're taking them to Babylon. Who knows what's going to happen to them? At that time, they probably thought this was a terrible thing, a tragedy, a calamity. They didn't realize that Kodesh Baruch Hu works in mysterious ways. This same Daniel, who grew up in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar, in the palace of the king, later on, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel, they would be the Moshiim, they would be the saviors of the Jewish people. So many times in history we see that. At the time it looks like a bad thing, it looks like a terrible thing is happening, and then you see years later, oh, if not for that, if not for 20 years earlier, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel were in the house of Nebuchadnezzar in the palace, they wouldn't be able to save Klal Yisrael some years later. So you see many times in history, at the time it might look bleak, later on, things become clear. We see this as well with Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Okay. 4 years later, in the year 3324, if you look at the timeline, you can see what it corresponds to. In the year 3324, which is again about 14 years before the Churban, this is already 8 years, or eight, nine, the ninth year of Jehoiakim being the king. It's already 4 years after he swore allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar. There's another battle that takes place. This battle takes place between Paroi and Nebuchadnezzar. It doesn't take place in northeastern Syria, but it takes place in the south, near the border of Egypt, or in the south, below Judea, below the Negev, in Egypt proper. And there's a big battle. Nebuchadnezzar comes to battle again against Paroi, and this time the roles are reversed. Paroi wins. Nebuchadnezzar has to retreat. Well, when Nebuchadnezzar retreats, this time Jehoiakim figures, okay, Nebuchadnezzar got badly beaten in another battle against Paroi. Whose side am I going to take now? If Nebuchadnezzar lost, he's retreating. Paroi is right over here. He's my neighbor. Jehoiakim switched sides. He switched sides and he promised even in another war where Paroi went to battle, he sent some of his own soldiers to help out Paroi. Nebuchadnezzar sees that his person, Jehoiakim, who swore allegiance to him, and he changes sides, Nebuchadnezzar does not like that. He said, here, I'm willing to let Judea go free. I'm not going to bother with them. But if he starts rebelling against me, starts taking sides of my sworn enemy, Paroi, Nebuchadnezzar comes back. In the year, it took him 3 years, but in the year 3327, he comes back down with one purpose only. He comes back in order to get rid of this king, to get rid of Yoyakim. And the Medrash describes it. Look what's happening over here in number 3. Amru, they said, Kivin Sha'ala Nebuchadnezzar Lachives Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar comes down to destroy Yerushalayim. This was in the year 3327. Again, this is 11 years before the Churban. Allah v'yashav lo'i b'dafno shel Antuchia. See, sitting in Antuchia, which is again the northeastern part of Israel, on the border of Ashur, of Syria, and northern Israel. Yoda Sanhedrin g'doyle l'chosai. So the Sanhedrin came towards him. Sanhedrin from Yerushalayim came towards him. Amulei, they said, Higia zmano shel bayi zeh l'chorev. Is it time for the Beis HaMikdash to get destroyed? Amulehem lav, no. Elo Yoyakim morebi. I'm coming for one purpose only. Yehoyakim, this king that I put in place, who was supposed to be my vassal, he revolted against me, rebelled against me, he went with Paroi, Tzneuli, give him to me, Beilech, and I will go. I don't want anything. I don't want to start up with you. I want to continue letting you live in peace. I just want Yehoyakim. Bo etzlev omulay leYoyakim. So they went to Yoyakim, they told him, Nebuchadnezzar boilach. Nebuchadnezzar wants you. He wants you to give yourself up. Omulahem, see, he turned to them, Yoyakim, you know, he was a Lamdan. He said, Kach oisin, doichin nefesh mipnei nefesh, doichin nafshi umekayim nafsheichin. What, are you going to give up one life for another life? After all it says, leishasgir eved al adoinov. You can't return a servant back to his master. I'm not going to be the scapegoat. I'm not agreeing that you should give me up. So they didn't have a choice. Amdu v'natlu v'shilshalu huloi. They took him and they put him in chains. The case of Shalu, how did they put him in chains? Rabbez, Rabbez Shimon, they said, Chai Shushroi, Rabbez Shimon, I mean, Meishushroi. The whole machlekes, whether he died first, and they took him afterwards in chains as a corpse to Nebuchadnezzar, or they took him alive. It's not clear. I think the secular historians say that he actually died beforehand. Another matter says that he died, that he was, the Gemara says at the end, Amar Reb Shua ben Levi, Ani Mikayim Divrei Shneim, Chai Shushroi, El Hashem Mufunek, Meis B'yodem. In other words, they took him alive. At the end, he died on the way. He wasn't used to being in chains, and he died on the way. Whatever it is, he came to Nebuchadnezzar, and he came already dead. What did Nebuchadnezzar do? Reb Nechemiah says, Not loy v'yichziroi b'chol ori Yisrael v'hogoy, v'hoye mechatech m'menu k'zesim, u'mashlich l'klovim. He literally cut him up in pieces and went around from city to city through the entire Judea. One thing Nebuchadnezzar did not accept. Traitors. You're my vassal. You swear allegiance to me. And then you go stab me in the back. You go with my sworn enemy. That he didn't go for. He said, that's what the Pasuk says. K'vuras chamo yikover. The Pasuk says, the Navi prophesizes, you'll get buried like a chamor, like a donkey. Heichun yikvuras chamor, loy b'mei hakelef. Like a dog. Where's the burial place of a donkey? In the insides of a dog. So he basically cut him up in pieces. He spread him all around the Eretz Yisrael. And that was the end of the great Yehoyakim HaMelech. Look what the Gemara says. The Medrash says, well, what did he do so terrible that he got such a terrible end? What was Yehoyakim? He had relations with his mother, his daughter-in-law, and his father's wife. This was the king, Melech Yisrael. Imagine what type of people we're dealing with. Rabbi Shulman Abraham said worse. He'd have roving bands throughout Yerushalayim. Mar Bironius, Byron Siron. He would go around, these roving bands would go around, kill the husbands, ma'anes nesheim, rape the women, u'machnis mamayim u'timyon, and then take all the money and put it all, and destroy all the money and give it all to the war chest of the king. So Yoyakim, by no stretch of the imagination, was a tzaddik. This was the king. Imagine, this Yoyakim was a son, don't forget, he was a son of Yoshio HaMelech. His father Yoshio HaMelech was a tremendous tzaddik. He's the one who wiped out Avodah Zarah throughout Israel, throughout Klal Yisrael. And his own son, Yoyakim, this is the type of king, the type of person that he was. So you can see what times were like at that time. When I said before that the king did not let them do tshuva, this is the same king that he was, this type of person. In other words, it started from the top down. This was Yoyakim. Okay. What happened afterwards? So in the year 3327, Yoyakim was killed. Who was the next king? So the next king they made at that time was Yehoyachin. Yehoyachin was Yechaniah. Yechaniah Melech Yehuda. Now, look in the Pasuk in number 4. The Pasuk in Melachim again gives us short snippets of what took place. ויצא יהויכין מלך יהודה על בבל, מלך בבל, הוא ואימוי ועבודה בסוגו וסריסוב, ויקח אותו מלך בבל בשנת שמונה למלכוי. All we see is that יהויכין, the next king, went out to greet Nebuchadnezzar. So, ויצא משום אז כל אויצרס בית השם, ואויצרס בית המלך, and he went out to greet him, and they ransacked, they took away all the gold and silver, and all the treasures of Beis Hashem. Who was Yehoyachin? What was his background? Why did he become king? Now, Yehoyachin was the son of Yehoyachin. So look in the Medrash, again, the same Medrash in number 3, continues in number 5. Kivin Shehogai Nebuchadnezzar, after Nebuchadnezzar killed Yehoyachin, after he rebelled against him and he was a traitor, Himlich es Yechonya b'noi tachtof. So Nebuchadnezzar put up Yechonya. You know, all Nebuchadnezzar wanted, he wanted Yehoyachin. He rebelled against him. He had no beef with Judea, with Klal Yisrael, not even with the family. He said, okay, I want Yehoyachin. I'm ready to put Yechonya to be the vassal king after his father. He'll be the next king of Yehuda. V'yorad leil b'av, and he went back. Yotzu kol bnei b'av l'kal, said they all went to greet him. Amru lo, they told him, Me'al Sisa, what did you do? Amalem, so he told him, Yehoyachin moradi, Yehoyachin rebelled against me, he went after all with Paroi, Varaktiv, and I killed him. V'imlachti Yechonya v'noi tachtov, and I took his son Yechonya, instead of him, he became the next king. Amru lo, matlan, so they told him a moshal. Amar, they told him, Gur tav mikelev bish leitalbi. Gur bish mikelev bish alachas kama v'kama. He says, a lion, coming out of a bad dog is not a good thing. But to take a bad cub from a bad dog, that's even worse. In other words, Yehoyakim, the first king, he was a son of Yeshua HaMelech. Yeshua was good, but look what you had. You end up with garbage, and he was no good. You're going to appoint his son? His son is no way he can be good. He's a bad cub from a bad dog. He is no good. His father's no good. You don't appoint his son after him. It's worse. He said, look at him, Yehoyakim was at least, he had a good father. This one is worthless. He's no good. His father's no good. You can't do that. You're going to get stabbed in the back by him himself as well. So he was right. Nebuchadnezzar says, you're absolutely right. I'm going to go back and get rid of Yehoyakim. Now look what happened over here. Yehoyakim was a king for exactly 3 months. He didn't do anything wrong. He was put there by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar had a change of mind and he took him back. Since he took him back, because he really didn't rebel against him, he didn't do anything wrong, so he just removed him from power. We're going to soon see, he removed him from power, he exiled him to Babylonia. True, he kept him in jail in Babylonia, but he was a royal king. He exiled him, he gave him all his royal privileges up there in Babylonia, because he didn't really do anything against him. He didn't do anything wrong, he decided he made a wrong move. Tactically, it's the wrong thing, I'm not going to make him the king. Look what the Medrash says. Miat Shamalem, Va'olav Yashav, Adafim Sham Tuchia. Same thing. Yod the Sanhedrin Gedoyle Likosai. So the Sanhedrin came towards him. Va'omolo, Yigiyaz Mana Shabbai Zelachorav. Okay, it's a time to destroy the base. Make this Omolem Loi. Elo Oisishim Lachti Tenuli, Vani Oilichli. Just give me back the person that I made king. I made Yechonya the king. I don't want him to be king. It's no good. It's a bad lion coming from a bad dog. It's no good. It can't be good for me. I want him back. So Azlin Amrin Lichanya, then he went to Lichanya and they told him, Nebuchadnezzar boilach, Nebuchadnezzar wants you. Ma'asa, what did he do? Everybody knows his medrash, nobody knows in which context it's put in. Ma'asa, what did he do? See, he realized that he was not going to get killed. He realized that the end is near. See, Ma'asa, what did he do? Omad v'konas kol mavtecha is Beis HaMikdash. He went, he took all the keys of the Beis HaMikdash. V'olo l'roi shagag, he went to the top of the Beis HaMikdash. V'omad, he said, Yibonish leilam. Since we were not able to be the guards, keepers of your Beis HaMikdash, until now we were faithful balabatim, faithful guards of your home. And we had the keys. From here onwards, the keys are for you. And what did he do? He threw the keys up in the air. Everybody knows the famous medrash. One medrash says, one Amir says, that like a fiery hand took those keys and it didn't come down. They went up and they never came down. Whatever it is, whatever the message, whatever the concept in this medrash is, but basically he went and he said his goodbyes to the Beis HaMikdash. He understood that this is the end. If he's going, and he... At least it didn't look so bad. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu does say that he was as bad as his father. He didn't have really chance to do much bad. He was only 3 months he was a king. Against Nebuchadnezzar, he definitely didn't do much bad, because he just put him over there instead of his father. He realized he made a mistake. He took him back up. So the Medrash continues. Ma'as Nebuchadnezzar, not like the chavshe beveis asurim, v'chol mishoy nechbash biyomav, le'yosim v'sham lo'ilom. So Nebuchadnezzar comes, takes Yechoniah, that's what the Pasuk said before in Malachim, Yehoyachin, which was Yechoniah, was the same name. He went up with him and his mother and his servants. They all went to greet Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar says, okay, you come with me. He takes him up to Babel and he puts him in jail. Beveis asurim. In those times, the Medrash says, you come into jail of Nebuchadnezzar, it was life. You never got out. That was it. You were languishing in jail, and that was going to be the end of Yechoniah. Listen to what happened. Number three. Interesting medrash. Gala Yayachin goes to Sanhedrin Gdol Imoy. So Yayachin went down, and Sanhedrin came with him. We're going to soon see what that means. Oysa Shah Yoshua Sanhedrin Gdolo Al Daito. So the Sanhedrin was there. They came along with him as well. We're going to soon see that not just he took Yechoniah Melech Yehuda, but he took 10,000 people with him. HaChorosh VaHamazgir. This is in the year 3327, which is 11 years before the Churban HaBayis, before the destruction of the temple. He took Yechoniah, and he took a whole bunch of other people along with them. Amongst them was the Sanhedrin. And they said, V'yameinu Malchus Beis David Posekes. Look at this. This is the end of Malchus Beis David. So Ma'ana said, what should we do? In other words, he's languishing in jail. Maybe at that time he didn't have any children yet. He was a young man. Yechoniah was, I think, a man of 18 years old. They said, this is the end of Malchus Beis David. Nelech v'nefayes legidlas. Let's go speak to Gidlas, who was, I guess, one of the ministers in the Babylonian government. V'gidlas lemalka. And Gidlas will speak to the queen. And the Medrash even says the name of the queen. They knew to get to a man, many times you have to go to the wife, to the queen. U'malka lemelech. And then the wife, the queen, she would speak to Nebuchadnezzar. So what happened was, and they told her, you know, we have to do something. This is not fair for Yechoniah. Look what happened. Kivin Shabon Nebuchadnezzar Lizakiglo, when Nebuchadnezzar came to be with his wife, Amalei, so she told him, At Melech, v'Yechoniah ain't a Melech? It's not fair. What, well, you're a king, you can have a wife, and Yechoniah is also a king. After all, yes, you put him in prison, he doesn't deserve a wife. Miyad Gozau v'Nosan Leishtoi. His wife convinced him, and he said, okay, I'll give him his wife. His wife can be with him. In jail, a letter come into the jail to be with him. So the Gemara says, Kivin Shabali Zakiglo, so they allowed the wife to enter the jail to be with her husband, with Yechoniah. Kivin Shabali Zakiglo, Amra, she said, Kishoshana Adoimo Reisi. She said, I just became a Nida. You can't be with me. I just became a Nida. So Porash Mimena. So Yechoniah said, okay. He separated himself from her. Miyad Holcha V'Sofra V'Tora V'Tovla. She went and counted 7 days, and she went to the mikveh. Said, in Zlongi Yun Yushalayim, you were the king, you didn't care about Hilchas Nidr. You didn't care about mitzvahs, Tairas HaMishpacha. Now when you're in Chutz La'aretz, now when you're languishing in jail, then you are fulfilling it. But nevertheless, Omer Reb Shabtai, Lo'izaz Misham at Shemoch HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Kol Avoy Noisov, Aloysa Shomar, Kulachi, Ro Yofi, Umumin Boch, Yotzo Basko of Omulem, Shuvu Banim Shavim, Elpam Shuvu Seichem. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that even Yechoniah, wicked as he may have been, but that's when he was in Eretz Yisrael. Once he came to Chutz La'aretz, he started keeping the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's another phenomenon that many times we see throughout our history. You know, when they were in a certain place, and things were going good, they were not following the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they were not keeping Torah mitzvahs. Once they were uprooted, and they were thrown into a gullus, whatever gullus it was, then people joined together again. They went back to their roots. They went back to Torah mitzvahs. We see that throughout our history. Any time when we're, you know, we've been in a place 200, 300, 400 years, and we've become already somewhat assimilated, and then we're thrown out, then we start again. There's a rejuvenation, there's a rebirth, there's a refocus on our Yiddishkeit and Torah mitzvahs. We see the same thing, believe it or not, in the time period of Yechoniah. Yechoniah, as long as he was in Eretz Yisrael, he did everything that he could do. He wasn't a good person. He didn't keep the right way. Once he gets thrown into jail in Bavel, that's when they already start keeping the Torah mitzvahs. We see that phenomenon already back then. Yes, Stewie.
This is what I'm talking about, the complacency. So you get, you know, I thought you thought to put us here. You've got us in a good place.
That's right.
We can do whatever we want. It's just once you lose control.
That's right. Then that's when you start realizing. But interesting, we see it already in the time of Yechoniah HaMelech. Okay.
His father instituted a tzum.
Right. But if you, so you have to understand, there was this dichotomy. They were, there was, no, it was, in other words, outwardly, they were Jewish people. The Karbanos continued all the way through. Until the Churban, the Karbanos continued. They knew they were Jewish people, but they were so corrupt. You see how corrupt? You see the stuff they say about Yoyakim and Melech. So one was not a steerer to the other. In the personal life, they didn't do it. You see, personally, he didn't keep Tyrus and Mishpacha. Yeah, when he came to Golas, that's when he realized, I should go back to the ways of my grandfather, of my father, of Yeshua HaMelech. You know, they had it in them, they just didn't keep it. They were corrupt. Okay, another very, very important factor which happened at that time, probably one of the most important things, is turn back to number 4 on the sheet, the last pasuk in Melachim. The pasuk says like this, V'higlo eskol Yerushalayim eskol asarim. Now, when Nebuchadnezzar got rid of Yechoniah in the year 3327, and after he put him there for 3 months, he got rid of him. Again, he didn't kill him, he didn't rebel, he put him in jail. Years later, one of the Persian kings is going to Vayenaseyu, is going to put him back up, he's going to elevate him back to his original post. He was still Melech Yehuda, he was still king of Yehuda. But he exiles him to Babylonia, V'higlos kol Yerushalayim v'skol asarim. Together with him, he exiles Yerushalayim, all the Sarim, all the ministers, v'skol gibore echayel, all the strong people, Aseres alofim goylo, 10,000 exiled people, v'chol ha-chorosh v'ha-mazger, and all the artists, chorosh is artists, mazger is shoarim, is gatekeepers, loy nisha zulas dalas amoritz, who stayed behind? The people of the land, simple folk, stayed behind. All the powerful people, the artists, and the gatekeepers, 10,000 of them strong, all were taken to Babylonia. This was the second Golas. What's significant about the fact that the artists and the gatekeepers, so you can say these were the upper echelons of society, the aristocrats were taken. Look how Chazal explained who were these Chorosh and the Mazger. Very, very important. Number 6 on the sheet. Sayyid Olam says, V'higlo es Yerushalayim v'sasorim aser salofim goylo. Yehudim shloish salofim. 3,000 from Shevet Yehuda. Umibinyonim ushar shvotim shivas alofim. 7,000 from Shevet Binyamin. Hakol giborim oisim ulchomo. Strong men, powerful. Giborim oisim ulchomo. So the Medrash asks, V'chimah gvura b'vnei odom ha'mahachim b'goylo? Is it relevant that they were strong people, soldiers? They're going in exile. Mamel chom oisim de'odem askukim v'zikim v'nesunim v'shalzalois. They're taken in chains. Is it relevant that they were strong warriors? Elowat giboirim hala hakoil giboirei toira. Strong people are the talmidei chachamim, the ones who are strong in Torah. Shnei ma'baruch hu Hashem, malachet giboirei koich. Oisim l'chom ha'shayim noisim v'noisim v'lcham tashu toira, u'mitoichon hachorosh v'hamaz ge'elef. Chorosh and Amazia are not the artists and the gatekeepers. Look what the Gemara says in number 6, the second one, Talmud Bavli. Chorosh v'amazge elef. Chorosh, that's not the craftsmen. Shepoischin hakoil nasu kachereshin. These were the great Talmidei Chachamim. Oposchin, once they open their mouth, hakol nasu kachereshin. Everybody else becomes like a mute, becomes like a deaf and mute, doesn't say anything against them. Once they speak words of Torah, they say, this is the halacha, then nobody else can say anything. These were the creme de la creme, the great scholars, the Talmidei Chachamim of the generation. Mazger, it's closing, not people to close the gate. Kivin shesoygrin ba'halacha, shuv ein poischin. The closers, not the closers in a game, the closers, the ones they close a topic in halacha, shuv ein poischin. Nobody can reopen it. These chorosh and the mazger, 10,000 strong, become all you, aseret alofim, or elef, a thousand amongst these 10,000, which were chorosh and mazger, were the greatest scholars, the Talmidei Chachamim. These were the creme de la creme of the Jewish people. What he did in Nebuchadnezzar, he didn't just take Yechoniah, but he took all the scholars, the spiritual people of Klal Yisrael. That was a terrible thing, because I don't know if that was his intention, but what happened was, who was left behind in Eretz Yisrael? Who was left the last 11 years before the Churban? The Amei Haaretz, the simple people. They had no leaders. Yes, the Yirmiyahu HaNavi was still there. But if there's any chance of them changing the ways, if all the Talmidei Chachamim, the Sanhedrin, everybody came to Golis, to Bavel, this was really the beginning of the Churban. If you look back on the chronology sheet, I wrote 3320 Golis Echot, Yeladim. These were the chosen, these were the prize chosen, the youth. The Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel. In the year 3327 was Gullah's base, HaChogosh VaHamazgir, these were the Talmidei Chachamim. With the result that the ones that were left behind were only the Amei Haaretz. It's very, very important what these people did. Again, at that time, they probably thought, look at this. They're taking away the creme de la creme. They took away our children. They took away our youth. They took away our future. They took away all the Talmidei Chachamim. This must have been a terrible, devastating blow to the people left behind. But look, these people, when they went to Bavel, what's the first thing they did? Now, I want to leave this for next week, because I see it's already 10 o'clock. But we'll do this next week. But the first thing they did is they built up Yiddishkeit in Bavel. The Medrash says, we'll see next week inside, one of the things they did, they took stones from Yerushalayim, according to Rav Shchira Goyim, they took stones from the Beis HaMikdash, and they built a shul in Nahar Dor, which was in Bavel. Because they realized, if we're here to stay, we're going to build up Torah. So therefore, though it might have been terrible at that time, when you look at that time, you see it's terrible, and there's nothing left, and what are we going to do? But they laid the groundwork already for the illustrious Golus Bavel. Golus Bavel, which lasted only 70 years, but then the Torah, which lasted in Bavel for another 1,500 years, the groundwork was laid already by these Chavash V'Hamazgir, the creme de la creme of the people staying behind, the people coming to Bavel 11 years before the Churban. So at the time it might have been a terrible calamity, but it was a tremendous chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed. That they came there, and they had more or less, they weren't ravaged by war, they didn't undergo the same treatment that 11 years later the rest of Klal Yisrael underwent, and they were able to lay the groundwork for Klal Yisrael coming to the Golus of Bavel. What happened to the people, we're going to see this next week inside, because it's nice to see it inside. What happened next week, we're going to see the people left behind, the things that they struggled with, because you have to understand who was left in Eretz Yisrael. There were the Amei Haaretz, Zulas Amei Haaretz, and the power started changing in the region. Paroi died, his son took over. There was a power struggle, and again, this was really the beginning of the end. This was the beginning of the end of the Churban. We'll see next week what took place in Israel and how things led directly to the Churban Abayis.